I'm just excited for what obviously is to come. I think people seem to forget I'm only 25.
I know, that's what.
I've been around the league for so long now. We're building something really special here, and we've just got to find those last little pieces and we'll be on our way. Whatever it took, I was willing to do. That's just how I've always been as a kid playing basketball as well. I've just wanted to rip your head off. Everyone just wants to win a championship. No one's caring about individual accolades. All of us want to bring the first championship to the heartland.
Welcome back to another episode of The Huddle. And if you're watching this, not just listening, we look comfortable here. It's because we are. And I'm joined by a very special guest, Angus Glover. And Glove, firstly, I say we look comfortable. We're sitting in the new Players Lounge of the State Basketball Centre of your new team, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. My first reaction is this entire place is elite. And what was yours like when you first walked in?
Yeah, my eyes opened up massively and my jaw dropped. Seeing the Players Lounge and walking around, seeing the whole stadium, it's just unreal.
How's it been the first few days as officially a Southeast Melbourne Phoenix player? Is it sunk in yet, or do you think it'll take a couple more weeks?
It's getting there. Obviously, being down here playing for Eltham in the NBL 1, I've got a lot of people that have come to the games and come and said g'day to me that are Phoenix fans, and obviously have plenty of good messages and everything like that. So it's definitely starting to get there, but give it another week or so, I reckon it'll fully sink in.
How do you deal with free agency as a whole? Is it an anxious feeling? Is it an excited feeling for a new challenge, a new change of scenery? And we know some players absolutely hate it. We know some players just understand it's part of the business. How do you deal with it?
I guess mine was obviously a bit different. I was originally contracted to Sydney for next year and got a release and came to the Phoenix. So mine was probably a bit different. Normally, I think every time basically I've been a free agent, I've either re-signed or obviously when that COVID year happened, the Hawks were in voluntary administration. So it's been very odd for me every time I've been in free agency, but this kind of happened very quickly and just stoked to be here.
What's the most exciting part about joining the Phoenix? And you can't just say the Players Lounge, although you do tell me there's a Nintendo Switch here that you're going to be the king of, but everything about a change of scenery can be exciting, but it seems like, especially with this investment here in this new facility, that it's going to be really exciting to be part of.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm going to live in the gym and the recovery center. So that's a definite. But just, I think the freedom to play for me and have a bigger role and everything like that, and obviously the talent we've brought in the core group they've already had coming back, I thought was a real point for me to – I wanted to join. And we're building something really special here, and we've just got to find those last little pieces and we'll be on our way.
I mean, that's the key question for me, and I'm sure a lot of people want to know, is what was the main attraction to the Phoenix? Because you're a fan favourite wherever you go, and I'm sure every team would have loved to be able to have you as part of their roster. So why did you end up joining the Phoenix?
I think obviously Foxy was in my ear last year, playing at Eltham last year as well, and just seeing the growth they've had since being in the league. I've been in the league that whole time, and just seeing it go from strength to strength every year with their fan engagement, how they play, everything like that. I like Mike's system, so I wanted to be a part of that. And at the end of the day, I want to try and bring a championship to the heartland.
You do mention the fan engagement, and this is a very big community club down here, especially where we are. And I said, everybody likes you wherever you go. I'm sure you actually are really enjoying that part about being here as part of the Phoenix, getting out and doing all the school clinics and doing all of that, but also seeing them come through to games as well.
Yeah, for sure. I used to be that kid living in Wollongong, always used to pester the players as a kid. So I know just how important it is to give back to the community, give back to the kids, whether you win or lose, always giving some time to them. And I'm going to continue to do that, obviously, but being that kid back in the day, I know how much it meant to me as a kid, and I know how much it means to these kids now.
We'll touch on a bit more about the team going forward and the roster you're putting together, but looking backwards, and you mentioned the release getting out of Sydney, and you've been through more in 25 years of your life that a lot of people have their entire lifetimes, but just another obstacle, another hurdle for you to get over in terms of not having the role that you thought. How do you deal with that? Is everything you've been through in the past help you with a different kind of situation like that to get through, or is it just completely new and you've got to figure it out?
It was definitely new, but yeah, I think I've had so much adversity in my time, in my whole life, but also basketball career, that you kind of learn to deal with it on the fly almost. It's definitely a different situation compared to an injury or whatever it is, but I was also trying to make the most of what was happening. And for me, that was getting extra weight sessions in, getting more shots up, whatever it was. I wanted to fine tune my game. So when my number was called, or obviously trying to show out a bit now in the NBL one, I was just ready to perform and show that I'm still improving, even though I'm not getting the minutes I was getting.
How hard is it for you to deal with the outside noise during that? Because a lot of people, whether it's commentators, whether it's fans, I'm sure your friends and family are saying that, well, your role should be this, like you should be given this opportunity, and for whatever reason it's not there. Do you block it all out, or is it inevitable that it's going to sink in just ever so slightly whilst you're going through it?
You try to block it out, but yeah, it's incredibly hard to do. Yeah, I guess you kind of listen maybe the first couple of times it happens, and as the longer it went on, and you got to learn to block it out a bit. Like, obviously, I'm an only child, so my parents give everything to me, and so they were always talking to me about it and everything like that, but I tried to try and not diss myself, but just try and almost change topic. And obviously getting a dog during the season last year helped, because yeah, you just take your mind off things and go for a walk or play with him. And so that was honestly a blessing in disguise, getting a puppy.
They're always happy to see you, right? No matter win, lose, whatever happens. I like that. It could be some advice for a lot of people there.
Exactly. It's funny. Like, obviously, I don't have a kid, but you hear about all these people that have kids and play when they have a bad game or whatever. Mm. They go back and the kid doesn't know what's just going on. And you go from being upset to being happy. I've seen it plenty of times with teammates and opposition. And I know he's not a kid, but at the end of the day, he's done exactly that, basically.
I've got an 18-month-old who's currently teething. So if I came home from a game that I just lost or something happened, I feel like I'd be so upset to have to deal with a teething child. So you're probably doing better with a dog right now. I read the article recently that you mentioned how, of course, there's no bad blood between you and the Sydney Kings organisation. You had a lot of success there and everything that you've been through. The business side of it, in terms of needing a change of scenery, is one thing. But you've had some of the best basketball memories anybody could have in a Sydney Kings uniform.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, going back-to-back, it's pretty special. It's hard to do. You know what it's like to win one. It's just, it's hard enough to win one, let alone two, when you've got the target on your back the second year. And I've also had some of my darkest times in Sydney, in Cairns, in the COVID bubble, thought my career was over. They stuck it out with me, helped me get back to playing some very good basketball. And obviously very thankful for everyone there that kept me going, because at the end of the day, I was ready to be done. Obviously very grateful for the opportunity they gave me. And now it's time to start a new chapter in my basketball career.
Do you have any pinch yourself moments as you sit here 25 years old, new team, new challenges, new excitement, to think of those dark times where you nearly walked away from the game and it was nearly all done, and three ACLs? Not many people can say they've been with that and still playing at an incredibly high level. Do you have any moments where you're just proud of yourself for continuing to be where you're at and knowing that you're nowhere near at the ceiling yet?
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm just excited for what obviously is to come. I think people seem to forget I'm only 25.
I know. That's what...
I've been around the league for so long now. So I think I'm going into my eighth or ninth year coming up. So I've been around a long time. But just, just excited to see the growth I have left in me still, being so young. And obviously been through a lot. There's obviously dark times, like you said. But just very grateful I've made it out the other side. And on top of that, you add in all those dark days where people don't see. So everyone sees obviously the success and everything like that, but there's a lot of dark days and that probably don't go noticed. Even though people ask me all the time, how'd you get through it, all this and all that. I had definitely some steps along the way that helped me get through that, whether that was counselling or taking my aggression out and weight, whatever it was. Just you got to find things that work for you to get through the darkest times.
What did you learn about yourself through all that? Because you mentioned every athlete goes through it on different levels. It's ultimately the main reason why I walked away at 27. And you talk about counselling, talking to people. What did you learn about yourself? And it's weird to say that because you're still only just 25, as you mentioned, because not only just to get out the other side, but to go on and win back-to-back championships, the Game 5 performances, all of that, and to still be here ready for this fresh start, you had to have looked back and learn a lot about yourself in those moments?
Yeah, for sure. I think every time there was doubt or adversity in front of me whilst being healthy, I just kind of almost reflected back to this isn't as hard as what I've been through. It definitely is hard, but going through what I've been through, I think it's just made everything easier and actually put things into perspective for me. Like, obviously, grand final series, if you can't get yourself up, like I thought I had a pretty good series in that second grand final series. Obviously, game five, everyone knows quite well. But yeah, I think just what I've been through, you just kind of, you almost block out what's going on. And yeah, you know it's a game five, but I think, like I said, what I've been through, you treat it like a regular game almost. Obviously, you don't go into it like that, but once that whistle goes to the end, that's kind of how I treat it. I treat every game the same. Obviously, before and after, there's always more highs or lows based on the severity of the game. But yeah, for that 40 minutes, I'm coming at you for 40 minutes, giving everything I've got, regardless if it's a preseason game, regular season game, or a grand final.
It's fun to watch, that's for sure. And we're looking forward to seeing that again in a Phoenix jersey. A lot of people talk about when they have a big injury or whatever it is, a big obstacle, they can recall those moments. You've had multiple, and we talk about the three ACLs. Can you recall the first one? Or are they kind of blurry because there's been a few of them? Or do you remember those moments so vividly?
Yeah, I remember the first one quite vividly. I was at AIS at the time, watching the Boomers actually play at, I think it was Rod Laver Arena. I could be wrong, but in the Oceania Championships against New Zealand. And so at AIS, we took a bus down, however long that is from Canberra to Melbourne, and trained the next day, and just did a simple, try to do a rondo fake. Back in the day when I was playing point guard. And yeah, just knee gave way and got pushed off my line a little bit, and never felt anything like that in my life. So I had no idea what it was. All I felt was this massive pop and severe pain to my knee. And that was the only knee I got given the green whistle on. The green whistle's great. but other than that, yeah, the rest of it's kind of a blur. Like, obviously had some x-rays, some scans, everything like that. Had the opportunity to go back to Canberra, see doctors and everything, but I wanted to sit there and watch the Boomers play the next night after that.
Really?
Yeah. It's not, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're 17, 16, you don't really get an opportunity to watch the Boomers live in Australia back then, as much as we probably do now. So I was like, I'm not missing this out at all. And it was a very, very uncomfortable game. I was sitting in the front row with the guardrail up, so my knee was bent like crazy. So. Not good.
The Boomers win at least?
Yeah, they won. They won. Paddy went off as usual. Get back to Canberra eventually and just work out what the best situation was. And I think being as young as I was a bit, okay, I'll be back in 9 months. Like, no biggie. Probably didn't attack my rehab the best. But living away from home, doing an ACL, I think I matured quicker than probably what I would have if I didn't get injured.
So the first moments back to the court, do you remember that after the first one? Was there nerves? Was there just excitement? Again, you talk about how young you were and having to grow up quickly. Were you just thinking like, okay, this is a thing of the past now. Let's go on and then let's start my career again.
Yeah, I mean, typical player, you get minute restrictions when you come back from any injury. But being as young as I was, came back in 9 months on my first knee. And it was actually the first prospects camp in Canberra. So 32 of 17-year-olds, top 32 around the country, came, played in front of all these college scouts. But for me, I was already signed to St. Mary's at the time. And so there was actually a bit less pressure off because I wasn't trying to prove anything like majority of the guys there at the time. And there was a lot of nerves, but I was also pissed off because I only got to play 10 minutes. I got asked by Marcus Klusman, who's now coaching in Germany. He was the assistant coach at the AIS at the time. He was my coach for that week and asked, do you want to start? I was like, yeah, I want to get it over and done.
Get him done?
Yeah, I need to get it done. Couldn't eat all morning, everything like that. A million things going through my head. But yeah, just yeah, I think still, to be honest, I don't think I realised at that age what I just did to come back from, or like there was no emotion after the game, nothing. It was just kind of relief. Whereas I guess the other two, obviously I didn't play a game in between those two, but coming back from that one, there was obviously a lot more emotions going compared to the first one.
So the second one, after that, and you talk about the youth, did you know straight away? Did you know that it felt similar to the first one, or what was going through your mind straight away?
Yeah, that one was interesting because I knew exactly what happened.
Right.
That one was, the reason why I say interesting, because I was at the Nike Hoop Summit, playing really well, shooting the ball incredibly well. And I had some buzz about me that week because I just couldn't miss that week at training, and going into the game, I was going to be a very important player for the group. And yeah, 2 days before the game, I come off a screen and yeah, do the knee and know straight away. And it's different in the States. So a trainer, which is a physio over here, they can't diagnose an ACL.
Right.
He has to be a doctor. So we had that done and had to get the MRI done after the morning practice the next day because it was a night practice that I did it in.
Did you think you knew?
Oh, I knew.
Yeah.
But me being the idiot that I was probably at the time, in that environment, I was like, nah, I'm going to try and see if I can go here before the MRI. So in that morning session, they taped me up.
Really?
Yeah. So I wasn't in too much pain then.
Yeah.
So taped me up and my knee basically gave out within 5 minutes. So I knew, and that was only the warm up. So yeah. I knew straight away what happened, but I was trying to make it to the game at least. Didn't happen. Nike looked after me incredibly well. They took me basically to every great restaurant in Portland to make up for what's going on. So that was unreal. But yeah, just going to that doctor's meeting, and I'm like, you can feel that, right? And they're like, no, I can't feel anything. And I'm trying to convince them that, no, there's something there, but I knew there wasn't, but yeah, so I knew then and there that another 9 months down the toilet, basically. And that one was the hardest because mum was, obviously the time difference between the States and Australia, different. Couldn't contact mum at all. Dad was on a flight from Sydney to LA at the time, couldn't contact him. He was coming to watch the game in Portland. Yeah, and then, like, the only thing I could say to Dad when he first saw me was sorry, because he's just wasted all this money to come fly over and watch me sit on the bench and with crutches and everything like that. So, yeah, obviously I look back on it now, that was very emotional, but at the same time, I actually cared more about my family more than myself, I think.
You mentioned your parents. I want to talk about that as we go on, but I'm in a position where I can actually attest to that. Before they had Wi-Fi on all the planes, because I had a fractured foot in college when my parents were on a flight over and I couldn't tell them. You feel like there's no one to talk to. So you mentioned it being emotional because you can't contact the two most important people in your life at the time. What do you do? What's going through your head? Because this isn't the first time you've done a knee. It's the second one. So it's arguably worse, as you said, and you can't contact them. So how do you deal with it?
I actually kept calling Adam Capehorn, who was the COE coach at the time where I was, until he picked up the phone, because he said, you can call me 24 hours a day. So
you're testing it.
He picked up the phone, to his credit. Yeah, I mean, I just let out some tears. He let out some tears because he knows all the work I put in, obviously training with him every day for the last 18 months, living on campus there. And then eventually got a hold of my girlfriend at the time, now fiance, Kira. She just bawled her eyes out knowing all the work I put in for that. And mum was a wreck. She had some people come over and look after her and stuff. She, yeah, was not in a good spot at all, because I'm their only baby at the end of the day. And Dad isn't a hugger, but he didn't let go of me.
Yeah.
So it made me feel better knowing that mum was looked after by some of her friends back home. Kira had all her girls at AIS that she's still close to, and Obviously, Dad was with me, so we just spent a lot of time together. And I think as much as he was hiding it, he was very grateful we got to spend some time together with what was going on.
I'm interested in at what point of that second knee with the rehab did your mindset go from like this is really hard, like I'm struggling here, to like this is another challenge, like let's attack this, let's better rehab and let's come back even bigger and stronger. Do you remember a point where that switch kind of flicked, or did it take a bit of time?
So that one was an interesting one too, because I think maybe a month and a half in, so I did my first month and a half rehab in Canberra, and that's when I signed with the Hawks as a development player, even though I was going to sit out that whole year. And so they did the handover to BayMed at the time, and basically, yeah, that was an interesting challenge, because I've done whatever I've done here to now change and do different things, because obviously everyone has a different way of going about rehab. I guess as soon as I came back from Canberra, when I went from Canberra to Wollongong, a light bulb went off in me saying, that's enough now. And I lived in the gym, wanted to know everything about my body. Just whatever it took, I was willing to do. Whether I had to freeze my ass off in the ocean in winter, do stuff I didn't want to do, whatever it was, I was doing it.
Is that a silver lining, a weird way to say, because of all these injuries that you've come and you become, I guess, more addicted to that side of the game and your body, looking after your body, your mental? Do you think, had you not gone through all of that, do you think you'd still be at the level you are now in terms of the mental side of the game, the emotion side, or do you think you had to go through that to get to where you are?
A bit of both. So before I went to the AIS, I had a coach for the Illawarra rep under 16s team, and he was my New South Wales country state team coach as well, John O'Hargraves. He was a hard ass and kind of just drilled into us how to play tough, basically. Didn't really teach X's and O's at all. We won a national championship with New South Wales country under him as well, and we just outworked everyone. So I think that helped. But obviously going through what I've been through, it's just, I think, enhanced it even more for me. I don't know if I would be as hungry as I am now, but there's a good chance I probably would have with what I've been through in juniors coming to now.
One of the most fiercely competitive players in the NBL, there's no doubt about that. We see the way you play, the way you conduct yourself. Were you always like that as a kid, or was that something that your parents say you were at school, whether it was, I'm not sure, as you said, you're an only child, so normally that comes from people who have siblings, and they, where does it come from?
Everyone says it comes from the hair. Mum played basketball growing up, played for the Kitty Hawks in the Siebel back in the day, and she's very fiery as well, just wanted to win. Dad played basketball, plays golf now, has played golf basically since he gave basketball away at 18, and he's ultra competitive as well, so it kind of runs in the family. I've got a lot of cousins on my dad's side that are all competitive with each other, and they're competitive with me as well, so they kind of, we always try and get the best out of each other and stuff, and Christmas days are always fun when we play backyard cricket because there's no mercy. But yeah, I think obviously I joke about the red hair thing, but that's just how I've always been as a kid playing basketball as well. I've just wanted to rip your head off. Might let the refs know a thing or two as well, but that's how I've always been.
What about you mentioned your fiance Kira, like game nights or anything? Is I'm assuming she doesn't back down from a challenge either. Who walks away first?
this is interesting. Kira will definitely walk away first.
Yeah, you're not giving up, are you?
I don't give up. Yeah. Like, I don't care what it takes. I could go bankrupt even in Monopoly. We don't play Monopoly, but because she knows I'll be too angry at that. But let's say if I was to go bankrupt in Monopoly, I'll still find a way around the rules, whatever it is. Yeah. Both ultra competitive. I think it actually probably helps us get the best out of each other, to be honest.
You've grown so much, and I'm sure as a fiance, as a boyfriend, doing all that. In terms of on the court, what Championships aside, what's one of the most rewarding and one of the most highest points of your basketball career that you can look back on? Championships always going to top most things, but is there anything else that, that stands up out there?
I think for me, honestly, after the Cairns incident with my right knee, with that little fracture on the side, and we all thought I obviously did my fourth ACL, which came back negative, thank God. I think my first NBL game the year after, Kira was actually there to watch because they also were in the COVID bubble in that 2020 year. She knew how much I wanted to keep going and everything like that. And obviously the conversations I had with her around retiring at the time was pretty tough. And so she's seen day in, day out what I do. That first game at Kudos, where she got to watch me play and play well as well. Yeah, I just remember afterwards she ran down the stairs basically almost crying and just gave me a big hug because at the end of the day, no one know, other than mum and dad, no one else really knows what I go through behind the scenes as well. So yeah, that meant a lot to me, but also I think playing double headers with her is really, really cool. It's not every day that there's two pro basketballers playing at the same time or before each other or whatever it is. So we're competitive in our household, but nah, I that stands out for me.
I actually forgot, to be honest, about that fourth incident. When you mentioned Cairns, I remember calling that game now and what happened. When you went down, were you just certain this was the fourth one?
Yeah, I felt the crack and everything right really? Before the pop. Which, lucky enough, was obviously just the fracture on the side of my leg.
Lucky enough.
So lucky. But do the ACL tests and everything, and
yep.
I failed them.
Really?
So we all thought the worst and get the MRI done, go back to Sydney whilst the guys are in their little bubble still. And I was like, what just happened? Like, that's the luckiest thing ever. Probably the closest you could go to doing an ACL if you watch the footage of it that you can get to without doing it. So, yeah, I don't know what happened, but
you were due some good fortune.
Yeah, finally. Yeah. You know, it's taken a while, but yeah, that was hard. Being in that locker room before halftime, guys come in. So that was when the Cairns Convention Centre was getting redone. So it was the Bunnings Warehouse. So we had two different rooms. We had like a players' room and then like our meeting room, which was in a demountable. So you have to come past me to go back out on the floor. All the guys come up and say something, give me a hug, all that. DJ and I have gone through a lot as juniors against each other. Played 19s Australia together. And Didi as well. We really bonded because we all stayed at the same apartment building during that COVID because we could see each other. So we really bonded really closely. And DJ's just broken down in tears. Didi's broken down in tears. And I'm like, semi crying, but I'm trying to tell them, like, you got another half to play, like, don't worry about me right now. And then 40's in the background just trying to hold it in, and he's just looking up the side because you can see him starting to grow, and then he just starts letting it go a bit as well. And yeah, that also realized how much I meant to them as well, which I think is pretty cool.
And again, that now highlights of why that first game back the following year and the emotions coming out of that. I do just want to touch on quickly the championships, because the feeling you get in just winning one is a big deal. And after everything that you've been through, and we've only barely scratched the surface of really everything that you've been through, the trials and tribulations, to have it all summed up in a moment and now it's in a ring, in two rings, in memory. So what does that mean to you?
It means a lot, obviously, from what I've gone through, where I've come from, everything like that, to being a two-time champ. From being a kid who hated the Sydney Kings to playing for the Hawks to moving to the Rivals was unheard of, really. Like, Sav did it for a year. I go, Zave goes. We win two championships and now obviously here. But the two championships, yeah, obviously the first one's super, super sweet. Just obviously that year as well, we kind of started not too great and kind of just went on a 15-game win streak or whatever it was and just finished unreal. But for me, I think the second one, not because of the series I had, I think just because we had the targets on our backs from day one in pre-season to lead the league all year on the ladder, secure first place before the last round, everything like that, just shows how good of basketball we were playing all year. And obviously, Chase would nitpick little things here and there, as every coach does. Chase was a great coach. I loved Chase. And yeah, just we weren't playing great basketball though going into the finals. And then we found something again. And obviously that final series will go down as like this year's one, like in history, really. We lose game one and go steal a game over there without Zave and, and Derek. And obviously it goes to a game five and we get that one. That one was more of a sense of relief, but I think just the whole series, I think just how I played and the impact I had on it, to me that meant more for me. So yeah,
I'm not on the championship series voting panel, but would have been my vote to win the MVP of that series. I'm happy to say that on record. Derek was incredible, but I think what you did, you talk about heart and soul, was unmatched. I do want to chat, because we talk about the Phoenix going forward and how you said the core group they're putting together and how important that is. You've now lived that through the Kings. That core group going on the road, game two, stood up. Jordy Hunter, your new teammate here, who you've played with, you won championships with, is so important in a series. How do you stay ready for those moments? And maybe shed some light for our listeners as well, because unless you've played in a professional team, a lot of the time it's starters versus bench in practice.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to know, because that starting unit was loaded for the Kings. But I have a feeling the bench unit used to take it up to them and win, if not most of the time, at least half.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you've been there. Like, honestly, I think through the whole season, most, like, obviously the starters do win, but I think
now the bench gets it
a lot more than what people think.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely more than 50%, that's for sure. But, yeah, there were some wars at training. there were some great battles. I actually wish some of them were filmed. Some of the basketball that was played was just unreal. But yeah, it's just that was crazy for me just to experience playing against that caliber of starting five, which I think at the end of the day pushed the bench to get better. And because we were getting better, it just pushed those starters to get better, which in the end held us in good stead for all that season.
What does that bring you to this point to be excited about with the Phoenix? Because Nathan Sobey's been announced, Jordy Hunter, Mitch Creek, and again, the rest of the roster to fill out. But everyone knows how competitive you are. We're hearing this as well. It's going to be exciting to be able to go to battle with these guys every day, but then also go into a game and try and beat up an opposition.
For sure. I'm so looking forward to being a part of it. I know Creaky's ultra competitive. I know Sobey's ultra competitive. Obviously, I've been with Jordy for the last 4 years. I know how competitive he is. We all know how Ben Air is, Fox, like all of them. I know how competitive they all are.
Nice to film these practices.
Yeah, these will be some good practices coming up this year. But I think everyone just wants to win a championship. No one's caring about individual accolades. All of us want to bring the first championship to the heartland and really tick that box off. At the end of the day, I think we've got a great core. Now we've just got to build around it. And yeah, I'm just really, really excited to be a part of it and looking forward to spending more time with Jordy being goofy as hell.
I want to end on this point because I was actually just listening to a clip from Pat Beverley on his podcast, and he's talking about when Giannis mentioned how once you win that first championship, it's not like it's great, but you become hungrier for another. And then if you get another, you become even hungrier. How hungry are you for another one to bring here?
Extremely hungry. Obviously with where we finished last year, obviously a new club for me, but as an individual, wherever you finish on the ladder and having the success I've had in the past 2 years, I was extremely hungry last year, but I'm actually even more hungrier. Not making even the grand final series last year. But yeah, from that first year to second year, I was way more hungry. I know everyone else was who was involved. And to be fair, you're right. You get more and more hungry. It almost becomes like an obsession.
Mm.
You do whatever you can to set yourself up for February and March, and that's what we're going to try and do.
Glove, appreciate your time. We could chat for ages. Looking forward to seeing you in NBL 25 and beyond.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.